Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome to another edition of our program, Dare to be Different. Just wonderful to have all of you tuning in, whether it's via the audio streaming, Medium Wave 1548 Satellite Islam, and on the DSTV Book A 826. And it's a beautiful and splendid day in our part of the world. Very, very hot already this morning. And, you know, we've had this topsy-turvy weather we've been talking about all the time, where we have the cold spells, and then we've had the hot, and in between we've had some of the rain as well, and it's an ideal time for hoha breeding. Is that correct? And this morning we've got a wonderful guest, and it's Andrea, out from the most beautiful part of the country. But before we talk about hohas and so forth, hi, good morning, Andrea.
Good morning. How are you?
Very well, thank you. And I know we always talk, and I'm very envious about where you are. Just tell us, how is it on that side of the world? We know that there hasn't been rain, still very water stressed. Has been some relief?
Yes, we have. It's really very topsy-turvy here. We don't usually get thunderstorms at all. And lately we've been getting Pretoria weather. So in other words, it's hot all day. And then here around about 4 o'clock we get the civil servant rain with thunder and lightning, which is something that really doesn't happen here. We usually get the gentle rain that lasts for days and days. Didn't happen this winter, unfortunately. And we are pretty much water-stressed as well in this side of the world. So, yeah, the water thing is definitely something that we have to keep foremost in our minds.
Now, once you're talking about water stress, and we haven't had the rains, and you know, dams are not full, water restrictions applicable in that part of the world?
Well, yes, definitely. People are very worried. This is obviously a prime tourist area. And soon the tourists will start arriving, which will put extra pressure on the water resources. So we've got quite strict water restrictions at the moment. I prefer watering with a hose pipe anyway. I do a lot with the watering can. If I can, I use the watering can. So, yeah, saving water as much as we can, mulching, getting our plants established, not watering unless we absolutely have to.
I think those are three very important principles, you know, that, and many of us have forgotten that we were also water stressed last year. And like you said, water with a hose pipe, water plants if you can, and if not, even use a watering can. And the last one is about mulching, which is so, so important. And I think we've come to learn about mulching, and now people realize its value. But we still have people who want a pristine, clean garden that they can eat from. And I'm Muhammad smiling and say, well, you still have some of these persons who come up and sweep up all the dirt or all the leaves that have fallen, all the, you know, what we would consider as, green gold. Yes, perhaps that's the term we could use. Green gold, such that is so valuable to garden, people sweeping them up. And that seems to be a long-term time off where we're going to get people to understand the importance of mulching.
Yes, mulching is very, very important. Leaf matter and things like that is part of the cycle of nature. If you think of it, a plant grows, it dies, it goes back to the soil. That is what we should be doing. If we take dead organic matter away from the soil, we are actually impoverishing the soil over time. The fresh stuff lies on top and it gradually breaks down and then it becomes part of the soil, part of the organic matter of the soil. I've got some magnificent old trees out the back, and there's a layer of almost peat-like compost under those trees. This is obviously built up over decades and possibly even hundreds of years, because these are very old milkwood trees. And there's a layer, I'm not lying, I think it's about 10 to 15 centimeters thick of the richest humus that you can imagine. I don't take it because I would feel bad to take it away after it's been so long building up. But it's just to see how nature at work enriches the soil, because where I live, I have very poor soil. It's sand, absolute sand. Sand doesn't hold onto nutrition at all. You really need organic matter in sand. And then when you look at nature and how that cycle works, and how that actually enriches the soil. And then if you keep taking that away, then ultimately you're actually impoverishing the soil. And it to the point where it could actually even be irreversible.
You know, saying that, I'm sure there's lots of people come and visit your garden and say, we'd want some of that humus. You know, we want some of that. Can we not just dig it up? Because I think I'd be tempted and say, well, that would really enrich my soil.
I'm very tempted, I will admit. I actually used a little bit of it as potting soil once. It was fabulous. But, yeah.
Well,
I'm restraining myself. It's really, like I said, it's ancient tree. I think that's built up over hundreds of years.
you know, that needs a lot of restraint. I think that's willpower. But of course, knowing the value of it, and I think once we understand and we, you know, get to appreciate that, we would have the same not only willpower, but also not to be tempted to dig away at some of this very rich humus that you've got. Now, Andrea, carry on. Please do carry on.
Anyway, I was just going to say, well, the whole point is with mulching is you can, if you really, really, really don't like the whole leaf thing, you can do other things, cobblestone, anything like that, covering the soil. It does still at least have the benefit of keeping the moisture in.
You know, then the question always comes, and I know we've discussed it at length, is that even grass clippings, while it's green, it's not good, but to put it aside and then wait for it to brown and then put it on top, would that be a good idea?
Yes, although do be careful with grass clippings. They can sometimes form a mat, and then water actually rolls off that mat when you do apply water to the plant. So do be careful of that. Check it if you're using a thick layer of grass clippings. But yes, it does work. Just don't work it into the soil. Put it on top.
The most important is just to layer the soil. It's not to dig it in. And Andrea, I didn't know, you know, there's a lot of the research coming through and people are talking about this, and this is the no fork, no dig, and that's the philosophy that many gardeners and even established, not only nurseries, but even farms are going that way. No dig, no fork. What's your thinking on that?
Absolutely. You know, the thing is, I started actually in agriculture. When you plow, you are actually destroying the soil structure. Now, soil is a system. And it has structure. Think of it as a city or a town or a village. And it's functional the way it is. Now, as soon as you plow, you're breaking up that structure. Furthermore, you get compaction further down, which then later becomes a problem, then you have to rip. So, yes, you know, once you start working soil, it's a never-ending story. In a gardening context, whenever you disturb soil, you are opening it up to weed incursion. So, yes, you are also breaking the structure, but with gardening, that I would say is possibly to a lesser extent. There are exceptions to the rule. If your soil is very organic poor, then definitely digging in some compost to a depth of 1 to 2 spades, digging your bed, let's say, 1 to 2 spades, and then adding compost to the backfill, is a very, very good move. But the thing is, that's because compost builds structure. So yes, to a certain extent, yes, I agree with no-dig gardening, because the less you disturb soil, the more healthy it is, the more able it is to function as it should function in a system. And the less open you are to weed incursion because you're not disturbing the soil. But also, you do want that organic matter into your soil. So when it comes to very poor soils, which could be sand like mine, or very heavy clays that are very difficult to grow plants in because they're not welcoming, then you can change that around by adding compost. The wonderful thing about compost is that it's good in any soil. It's good for sand, it's good for clay. In clay, it will make the soil lighter and better drained. In sand, it will make the soil more water retaining. To a certain extent, of course, also nutrient release. But I say really compost is primarily for structure, to improve the structure of the soil when you have bad soil structure. But if you've got established plants, they're perfectly happy. There's no reason to go digging around their roots and so on. And you're disturbing the plant and you're disturbing the soil and you are breaking down the way that it should naturally work. And if that is working for what you're growing, there's no need to go around disturbing the soil.
Question coming through with regards to a vegetable planting. When you are in your garden, you're working out, and is it necessary for you to turn the soil, or should you just dig out the vegetables once it's ready?
Well, I would say this person is harvesting their vegetables, right?
Yes, that's correct.
Harvesting the vegetables. No, not necessary to turn the soil. In fact, don't. Just dig out what you want. Your root veg, I just pull mine. But I've got soft soil, so obviously it doesn't snap off or anything. If you've got a harder soil, then stick a fork in and just loosen it and then pull. But don't turn yet. If you're going to do any turning, do that when you're composting to prepare the bed for a new crop.
Okay, and the other thing with regards to that is when you're walking on the soil, you're compacting the soil. Is that correct?
Yes, it is. But I would also again say, well, look, it's not a massive weight. If you look at lawns, which are not my favorite thing,
yes, water guzzlers.
where there's not a proper pathway, you will see that there is compaction where people walk up and down a lot. And that even if you then change the route that people walk by putting things in the way or whatever, the grass struggles to go there because a lot of traffic has gone up and down and has been compacting the soil. So yes, to a certain extent, but certainly not to the degree that that heavy machinery and so on compacts the soil. And that's when it really, really does get problematic, is when you have heavy machinery and things like that going up and down. Then you've really got a heavy weight resting on the soil. To a large extent, nature is adapted to be with us. It was created to be with animals and to be with human beings. So to a certain extent, nature will bounce back from things like, you know, you walking on the soil or whatever. I had a weird question when I was at university. I asked one of my lecturers whether we crush bacteria and fungi, microscopic life forms, when we walk around.
What was his response? What was the response?
To tell you the honest truth, I never got an answer on that one.
Because I was just wondering, you know, because these are such tiny microbes and, you know, insects and so forth. Do we crush them or do they? I'm not sure. I don't know.
Especially single-celled organisms. Maybe they're small enough to sort of hide away. I don't know.
Well, I'm not even sure about that. The number to dial this morning, 854-1548. Any questions, any queries that you have for Andrea, please remember to call in. 854-1548. Join our conversation. Now, Andrea, yay, everybody's saying summer's almost here everywhere. The all-time favorites are in full bloom, and you need more of them. And you will find that, you know, there's so you're spoiled for choices. You know, there's the modern varieties are there. There's so many perennials, so many edibles. And people, there's no excuse for someone to say that he or she cannot have even a small bit of nature with around them. So whether it's in the patio or whether it's in a pot or, you know, a couple of containers, everybody can have some of that. Is that right?
Absolutely. And it's so beneficial. And the best thing is that you can do it for free. I am a very, very, I'm a skinflint. I do spend money on plants. When I do, I buy stuff that I can make cuttings from. And I've got a little area in my garden that I've turned into a little nursery. And that's where I germinate my seeds and I grow my cuttings. I like being on the cheap and I like gardening for free. It makes me feel good. I do spend from time to time. But like I say, I spend with the future in mind. For example, when I buy annual seeds, I will choose open pollinated seeds because open pollinated seeds aren't very, very special hybrids. They're growing out in the open. If I then harvest seed that has been growing out in the open, I can expect similar results from the second, third, and fourth generation. So I'm a skinflint like that. And when I buy perennials and shrubs and things like that, I'm often thinking, not always, I've bought a couple of things that I really can't propagate because I don't have specialized facilities in my garden. But on the whole, I will go for things that I know I can turn this one plant into 100 plants. Reason being, okay, I'm on a hectare of ground. If I was going to now landscape that really growing plant, it costs a fortune. And I am actually right now busy developing a guest cottage behind. And it's just beautiful to see it going on because the guy that's doing it, it's got a very nice mindset on plants and so on. And as he is doing the soil works, as he's completing them, he's asking me for plants and he's planting and he's landscaping it. And it's sort of the garden is establishing as the cottage is establishing. So it's quite a beautiful process. But I like doing it on the cheap. And to me, that is the way to go. Seed and cutting. Absolutely, there is no excuse not to have a plot. And if you don't have mother plants, you can visit your friend and ask them for cutting, ask them for seed. I've got a lovely exchange going on with a friend of mine who lives quite a long way away from me. But whenever we see each other, we're swapping plants. And I'm taking pieces from her garden, and she's taking pieces from my garden. And she's giving me a little plant that she grew from a cutting, and I'm giving her a little plant that I grew from a cutting, and so on. And so you really get to be able to enrich the variety that you've got. And it's fun. It's sociable. It's lovely. It's a lovely thing to do with a friend. And we do the same with our vegetable garden produce. I've got a lot. She's got a lot of that. And we give to one another. So it's gardening is such a lovely pastime. It's not just, a lot of people see it as being sort of a solitary thing, you do it on your own. Not really, no. It's good to get some gardening buddies and really get into it together and share tips, share advice, ask each other questions, share plants, share harvest. It's really a sharing thing.
Thank you very much. We're going to just take this question, and then we're going to go for a commercial break, and we come back, we'll continue with our conversation. Let's go for the question. Hello, assalamu alaikum.
Salaam.
Please go ahead.
I just wanted to ask you about the gardening. You know, I am trying on my own. It's just a hobby, and now I'm ending up with a garden full of fruit trees, and it's so small, like bonsai. Some cause it's very big stones in the bottom, and I can't manage all it. And but it's bearing fruit.
Okay, so you have a garden, and you've got.
I've got a small, about 18 centimeter mango tree. That's flowering, and the little tiny mangoes, and it's just flowering and bearing fruit. And I had a purple, and as it grows up, it only grew like a small baby, but it was flowering all the way up until it died down. The soil is not, my soil is like sand, it's like powder. And I always think that if I can get some clay to mix in it, then it will keep the moisture, because it just runs away.
Okay.
If you put water, it doesn't go to the bottom. I must, as long as I put water slowly, I must dig to make it like a mixture, you know, and until it is all wet and muddy, and then I know the water will go down to the roots. But it's growing. My garden is.
Hello, sorry, I think we lost that call. From what I understand is that the listener says that she gets her plants to grow to about, she said once 18 centimeters, and then they flower. She gave an example of a pawpaw and a mango tree, and then she also spoke about the soil that she has. Andrew, how can we help her?
Yes, we can definitely help her. I have basically the same kind of soil that she's talking about, like a sandy, powdery soil. She's talking about when she waters, the water's flowing off the top of the soil, it's not going in. Now, I've got several tricks for you. The first one is definitely compost. Compost and manure. Now, obviously, with your established plants, you don't want to dig too much around the roots right now, so you can put quite a heavy top dressing, maybe just scratch it in a little bit into the surface, and let nature take its course, let it go in. So definitely, manure is also very nice water-holding stuff, and it's more long-term. I prefer to dig it in, because otherwise it's going to get a lot of flies. So maybe she just needs to top dress with a lot of compost around them. Make a nice little dam around each tree. Now, when you water, go beforehand with a watering can and put a teaspoon of sunlight liquid, dishwashing liquid, in a watering can. Now, you're not going to try and water the trees with this. What you're doing now is you're breaking the surface tension. You're using a wetting agent, which is the soap. So now you take your watering can and you pour a little bit, just a little bit, onto each tree on the area which you're going to water. And then leave it for a little while. And then go and water. And with between the compost top dressing and the soap which you've used to break the surface tension, your water is going to go in. If it's not going in, just rinse and repeat. So in other words, leave the hose pipe, go and fetch your watering can, give it soapy water again. Soapy water is a wetting agent. If you think about when you're washing dishes, they're greasy. The grease doesn't come off. But when you use soap, the grease does come off. It's sort of like that with the soil. It's able to break through that that surface tension, that greasiness, if you like, that is preventing the water from going in. And that will solve her problem to a large degree. And then also feeding sounds like maybe quite nitrogen poor, because nitrogen is what gives you vegetative growth. So in other words, leaf stems, etc. So maybe look at busy using even organic soil fertilizer or a high nitrogen fertilizer on your trees when they're young, and then watering well using the method I described.
Thank you very much for that. So, in the question coming through about the sunlight, so it breaks down and it allows the water to go down to the roots. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. You get very expensive soil wetting agents with proprietary brand names and so on. Not necessary to buy them, because they're basically sunlight soap.
Okay, so just sunlight soap. You put them in about a teaspoon. What happens if you make a stronger mixture? I'm just asking. Perhaps put a tablespoon and then through. Would that be any adverse effect?
It probably wouldn't harm it at all, no, okay. Probably not. Soapy water is a gardener's friend. You can use it to kill aphids too. Yeah, no, slightly wood is a good thing. You can do more, but more isn't necessarily better, and it's not necessary as such.
Okay, we're going to go for a short commercial break. When we come back, we'll continue. Stay tuned. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Jazakumullah for tuning in. It's Dare to be Different and a wonderful, wonderful conversation we're having this morning. And our guest is Andrea, and she lives in one of the most beautiful parts of the country, and that's out towards the Southern Cape. And a lovely conversation. She's given us some new insights into gardening. And one question has come through, Andrea. Hi, good morning, Andrea. Are you still with us?
Yes, I'm with you.
One question coming, open pollinated seeds. And is that opposed to Monsanto? And what? How does one go about with open pollinated seeds? Would you only get that in, well, the question says, is it vegetables or all types of seeds?
All types. So your flower seeds and your vegetable seeds, and you buy them in the packets, typical packets that you find in the shops. A lot of the ones that they do sell are the open pollinated ones because they're the cheaper seeds. So let me distinguish. You get hybrids, you get GMOs, and you get open pollinate.
Hello.
To find probably list if you looked online and went, I want open pollinated. I mean, what varieties are there? Also known as heritage quite often because they've been around for a long time. And then you get your hybrids, which are done with controlled breeding. So in theory, this could have happened naturally, but what we do as human beings is be then very careful about what plant pollinates what plant, and you can get some very nice productive varieties out of that. But it does mean that your next generation won't be uniform if you collect that seed. Then you get your GMOs, which have been altered in the lab, and most of them are not fruitful in the second generation, which is a good thing, because we don't want to have new superweeds coming along. I know it's controversial. A lot of people say, you know, poor farmers in Africa, they buy these GMO seeds because they're very productive, and they then cannot collect seeds for the second generation of sowing. But when we're talking about an artificial variety like that, it's normally less ethically questionable if the following generation is fertile. So, most of the seeds that you can buy, I would actually even say all of the seeds you can buy in garden centers and whatnot, are probably not GMOs. They're probably either traditional breeding, F1 hybrids, so in other words, the first generation from a very select parent group, or else they're open pollinated varieties. So open pollinated varieties will more or less run true. They will tend to be variable, so you'll get a bit of a mixture in terms of, for example, plant height, flower color, if it's flowers, vegetable size, if it's vegetable. But it's the old-fashioned way.
Thank you very much. And I saw a number of brands. So these are the heirloom seeds, and you get them in the raw brand, and the number of brands that have come out, and it's the F1 generation. Thank you very much for that clarification. Well, we've got a call online. Let's take that one before we go to the next question. Hello, assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam.
Please go ahead, Bin.
JazakAllah for a very informative program every weekend. I tell two things. How do you replant if you want to take a rose and replant it? Okay. You know, make a stick from your original rose tree to make another one. And I have a yesterday, today, tomorrow, and I planted it, you know, it's like the third one. It just doesn't grow, so I don't know what is the problem. Is there any assistance you can give me? How do I grow it? I don't know. It just dies. It just stays small, about 15, 20 centimeters, and doesn't grow. It just has a few flowers, and it stops. It's the third time I've planted another tree, and it just doesn't grow. So any trick you can assist me?
Okay, whereabouts are you living before you put that phone?
I'm in the Zadville.
You're in Azadville. Okay, so a little clover. Shazakumullah for calling in, and we are going to be talking about, you know, taking clippings and cuttings and so forth. So just tune in. We're just going to go through one or two questions before we go to that one. Shazakumullah for calling in. Andrea, you heard the question about rose and yesterday and today and tomorrow. But before we go into that, Andrea, another question has come through with regards to manure. Do you have to wait for manure to, you know, well, matures when you put it into the ground? It means give some time before you plant any plants into that particular space.
In general, yes. I would definitely say that you should. The smaller the creature it comes from, the hotter the manure, and the more likely it is to burn, and the more you will need to compost it. So, for example, horse manure, cow manure, and so on, better, obviously, if you can put it in a nice big heap and let it really break down to a certain degree. But generally, not that hot. if you leave it on the surface. The thing with any fresh organic matter, including manure, is that if it's not properly broken down yet and you dig it into the soil, you'll get what is called a negative nitrogen period. What happens is that the soil microorganisms go, yummy, here's something that we can eat. And they then use the nutrients that are in the soil, particularly the nitrogen, to multiply, because they go, oh yeah, let's bring the family, and while we're at it, let's make more family, and all of this takes nutrition out of the soil, because that's the only place that these microbes can get nutrition. And so they actually pull nutrients away instead of the manure giving your plant nutrition. It actually takes away from it. And then of course the other problem with fresh being that it does have quite a high concentration of salt, and that can burn the plant. Even a well-composted manure can do it if you overdo the manuring. So breaking it down is the way to go. Nice big heap somewhere if you're out in the countryside. Otherwise, there's some fantastic composting bins and so on. Normally, if you buy a commercial manure, it will already have been composted.
Thank you very much for that. And that, let's go on to the next one that we're going to, you know, that we're chatting about earlier on. And that's taking and sharing. And you said it's a social exchange to be able to share plants and to be able to, take cuttings. Mohammed just indicated another caller, and I understand that one. Assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum, please go ahead.
I've got a peaches tree that started growing in the garden. I just wanted to find out how far must it be from the wall.
Okay, is this the first time that you've going to get fruit from it?
It's just started the fruits now.
Okay, Jazakumullah khair. You listen on here?
Ji.
Okay.
Jazakumullah.
The brother's got a peach tree and wants to know how far it has to be from a wall.
Perfect. Let's help him next. But I just remember there was a lady who wanted to transplant a rose bush.
Yeah, no, we do that one as we go, because that one goes to do with all the clippings and the cuttings. We'll do all of that. I just want to get the...
All right. So the peach tree. I wouldn't want a peach tree right next to the wall, partly for the plant's sake and partly for the sake of your building. They don't have that seriously aggressive roots. But at the same time, you don't want to take chances, number one. And number two, your fruit trees need a little bit of space. You're going to prune them into sort of a vase shape, most likely. And for that, you need a little bit of space.
About a meter?
I would recommend going away from the wall.
About a meter and a half? Would it be a meter?
A little bit further than that, even. I would definitely go at least
2.5?
At least 2 to 3 meters.
Okay, so at least 3 meters for both. Is it an invasive root?
Not really, but I prefer not to take chances. You know, it has a tap root, but it will also have roots out to the side. And in any case, anything that's up against the wall, you're going to end up having a lot of pruning to do, because you're going to have branches knocking against your roof, you're going to have branches knocking against your windows, and then also with a peach, you could espalier it, you could make it flat against the wall. I have seen that being done, but I'm not comfortable with planting trees too close to any foundation. The trees, the roots are always more extensive than the top, so I prefer going a bit away from the wall when it comes to any kind of tree.
But with this particular tree, it's already, it's already has the buds and so forth. So best just to leave it and let it fruit. And if you're wanting to do anything, to do it in the next season, is that right?
Always move during dormancy. So in other words, wait until it's thrown off its leaves. Hopefully it's a fairly young plant still, and you can still dig it and move it. Otherwise, let's just monitor the situation.
Yes, and I think that would mean like extensive pruning, like you said. Let's go back to the other questions that have come through, and so the one we were talking about earlier. The caller wanted to know that she's got rose and she wants to take a rose clipping or trying to get, how would you propagate from a rose that you have? And then she's got the yesterday, today and tomorrow, which isn't doing well. So let's go to the first one. If you wanted to propagate other roses from a particular, or from a mother rose that you have in your garden, how would you go about that?
And she also did talk about moving the plant. Also, again, in winter when it's dormant, and it will survive it. They're very, very tolerant of being transplanted roses, as long as you do it when they're dormant, so not now, in winter. Then, regarding the cuttings, again, not now. I'm not going to say it won't work, because plants will do amazing things. But I'll tell you when the best time is, if you want to make the cutting of a rose, is to do it in winter, and then to use fairly, fairly hard dormant wood, and then plant that into quite a well-drained mixture and give it water. The reason why I'm saying that is you can do soft cutting for roses. I've seen it done. But then you will want to have a mist system or something like that. don't think it'll do well in a little cloche that you make out of plastic or whatever. Like, I think that will be too hot for it. So I'm not going to say it's impossible. You can do it, but normally you would be looking at a specialized production facility if you're going to do box cuttings of roses in summer. And then the other thing to bear in mind with roses that you grow from cutting is that you get different kinds of roses, and some of them are grafted, and yeah, some of them are not, but most of them are grafted. Normally the pot roses that you buy are done from cuttings, and they're those smaller flowered roses that you buy as a present, little pot rose. I love them, they're gorgeous. I think they're done from cuttings. I can't see how they could possibly graft them, because they're teeny tiny young plants when they sell them. But the fancy varieties of roses are usually grafted. So in other words, what they've got is they've got a wild rose rootstock, and then that is strong. And then they've got a variety that makes a beautiful flower, but it doesn't make strong roots. And they will then graft that onto each other so that you get the best of both worlds. However, I'm not going to say it won't work, because I have actually seen somebody make a cutting successfully of a grafted variety and get some plant out of it. But do bear in mind that it probably won't be as vigorous as some other plant, because it doesn't have that wild rose rootstock.
So, and what you're suggesting is perhaps in winter to take the dormant hardwood. So when it's hardwood, you'd then cut it in winter, and then from there you'd be more successful than you would be in summer.
Correct, because you now don't have transpiration as a problem. Transpiration obviously being evaporation and leaves. Now, when we make cuttings, what we're doing is we're taking a piece of a plant and we're telling it it's got to survive without roots. Now, the way a plant lives is that it constantly draws water from the soil. Think of it almost like sucking up water with a straw if you're drinking water yourself. And there is pressure happening because the leaves are evaporating water. The water is being lost, and you get this kind of suction that pulls water up through the plant. Now, if your plant doesn't have roots, that whole process is a lot trickier for the plant. And wilting is your primary enemy. You don't want a cutting to wilt. So giving a cutting lots and lots and lots of water during the first weeks until it decides, hang on a second, I don't have roots. I need to do something about this. And then it begins to make a thing that is called a callus. So basically the bottom of the cutting starts to develop a swollen base. And in some varieties and species, you will find that this is even white. And it isn't a root yet. It's not a stem yet. It's not a leaf yet. It's a different, undifferentiated tissue. The plant's going, hang on, what am I supposed to grow from here? I'm not sure. But that thing can already start absorbing water. And then you can start producing the water. And then in a little bit of time, the plant goes, oh, yeah, roots. I need roots here. And it makes roots from that callus. And it's a wonderful process to watch. I love it. But the main thing that you have to guard against is evaporation. And the softer the foliage of the plant, the more likely you are to have problems with keeping the foliage fresh and making sure that this plant doesn't curl up and die because now, God, I don't have enough water. So you can counteract that with soft cuttings if you've got the time by misting them down with a little misty spray bottle, or by busy putting them in a very close environment. So, for example, creating a little frame and then covering that with some type of plastic, even cling wrap will do at a pinch, or some kind of a fabric which can be kept moist. But here you want to use a very, very light fabric that you can keep lightly damp. Then what you've got there is basically 100% humidity at plant level. Now, the problem with the plastic thing is that it does build up heat, which is why I kind of like the fabric idea. Using a very, very light fabric, the lighter weight it is, the better. And then moistening that and basically laying it over your cuttings, either resting it on the leaves or making a little hoop structure with wires or something like that and putting that over. This is known as the burlap cloud method. And basically what you're doing is you're planting out inside a little cloud. There's close to 100% humidity at leaf level. And you do have a cooling effect, which you don't get with plastic. With plastic, you've got heat getting trapped in there. So burlap cloud, if you're going to try doing it without a mist spray system or a fogging system or something like that, that's a great way of doing it on the cheap without having to now go and get a lot of expensive stuff. But with roses, I would definitely say that the dormant root is going to be the easiest, because you don't have to have that whole battle with evaporation going on.
Thank you very much. And remember, the caller also wanted to know, she hasn't had any success with yesterday, today, and tomorrow. Going up to 15 centimeters, she's now taken another one. She lives in a slightly, from the Johannesburg area, temperatures maybe a little bit, a degree or so colder. What do you think she's doing wrong, and what can help her?
I'm wondering, obviously I can't see the plant, yesterday, today and tomorrow are very sensitive to iron deficiency. So if she's seeing, and when a plant has got an iron deficiency, it's completely stunted. Iron and other trace elements are quite important to them. So if she's seeing green veins with yellow, the leaf is yellow but the veins are green, or some kind of a network effect where there's a network of veins that's green and then yellow blotches on the leaves, then it's probably stunting itself because it needs trace elements. And that's quite easy to fix. You just buy a little trace element mixture and give the plant a little bit of that. But to be honest with you, I'm a bit of a sink or swim gardener. If I've tried something two or three times and it doesn't work, and I just decide, no.
Doesn't work for me. But if I sit my neighbor's garden, what do I do then, Andrea?
Sorry?
If I then sit my neighbor's garden and it's growing well there, what do I do? Do I go and just take something there?
If there are good, healthy yesterday, today and tomorrow in her neighbor's gardens and so on, she needs to look at a couple of things. Maybe she needs to look at the spot she's planted it. Is it lower lying? Is it higher lying? Could even be a frost orientated thing, but I've grown yesterday, today and tomorrow in quite cold climates before. It could also just be a localized soil thing, so the soil can vary within a distance of a couple of meters, so maybe she needs to look for a new spot for her yesterday, today and tomorrow. Give it the best chance possible. I would always say, well, dig it in with plant it in with a decent sized planting hole, dug at least twice the size of a container, lots of compost, maybe it's a bit while it's young. But, like I said, I can't see the plant, so I don't really know what the problem is with the plant because I can't see it, which is difficult.
Yes,
the trace element deficiency, because they are quite common in yesterday, today and tomorrow.
So it's a trace element deficiency, and perhaps a good, mixture from the nursery would alleviate that problem.
Yes, that's right. Or an organic fertilizer, because organic fertilizers do contain the full range, including trace elements. So maybe she just needs, and they are heavy feeders. They are seriously heavy feeders. So, you get these organic fertilizers. Maybe that would be a solution that could help her to get it, up and growing during the summer so that it's strong enough to last the winter.
Another question coming through. I want to transplant, I want to take a clipping or a cutting of bougainvillea and transport. Would that be possible?
You can grow bougainvillea from cuttings. Again, unfortunately, they're quite difficult. But you can do that. Again, I would recommend the hardwood cutting route. You can do it softer, but I haven't had a lot of success with it. I'll be honest with you, very, very low rooting. And even with hardwood, quite low rooting. But that's just my experience and what I do in my little nursery at home and what you do in your little nursery at home. It might work better for you than it works for me. Bougies are a little bit difficult and slow. I would recommend doing them from hardwood cuttings. The most success I ever had was with hardwood cuttings at one nursery. I grew an extremely low rooting, so take a lot of it. Take, really prune your bougainvillea and take a couple of hundred of and jam them in. I would use a sandy mixture that's very well drained and then keep that moist and hope for the best. That might work.
And just a couple of other questions coming through again. While you're talking about clippings being a social exchange and cuttings, what other plants would do success that we could be able to do successfully?
Oh, there are so many. And we really started with the difficult ones, the roses and the bougainvilleas. But there are so many plants that are so easy to grow from cuttings. Daisy bushes, the indigenous yellow daisy bush as well, beautiful, easy from cuttings. Just take PC wash or what's that, about 10 centimeters long. I'm getting confirmation here. Strip off some of the lower leaves, stick it in a little bit of potting mixture, keep it moist, and Bob's your uncle. Cape honeysuckle, easy peasy peasy, just give it lots and lots and lots of water. I water my Cape honeysuckle cutting about twice a day, during the first 3 to 4 weeks until they settle down. There's just so many that I actually could get lost. Ground covers, most of the ground covers are very easy to grow from cuttings. I would say basically your herbaceous plants, herbaceous perennials and ground covers are usually quite easy to grow from cuttings. When you start getting up to shrubs, some are easy, some are difficult. But I've had huge success, with this one shrub, Solanum shrub with the blue flowers. I'm sure you know it. It's very popular. I mean, every time I prune it, I plant the pieces and they all grow. It's ridiculous. So I think it's really a matter of trial and error. When you prune your plant, go and take some pieces off, plant them, in little pots or trays, put them in a shady place, give them lots of water, and see what you succeed with. Sometimes the plant will look like it should be really easy to grow from cuttings, and it isn't, and sometimes the other way around. Rosemary, for example, I have huge success with from cuttings. I took the garnish from my plate my last birthday, which was in November last year, and they gave me lovely fresh pieces of rosemary, and I didn't want to throw them away, so I took them home, and I made cuttings out as best as they grew. I've got four little rosemary bushes from my birthday plate. So yeah, you can do weird and wonderful things with cuttings. Try, play around. Don't be shy, and don't feel sad if it doesn't work. Then just say, okay, well, that didn't work. Let's try something else.
Well, thank you very much for all of that, Andrea, and you take care. Have a wonderful, wonderful, whatever is the rest of this weekend, and you take care and look after yourself, and I've enjoyed chatting to you. I will chat to you again. Thank you very much for obliging to be my guest this morning.
It was lovely talking. Have a lovely, lovely day.
You take care. Thanks, Star. Bye-bye. And that is Andrea Durham, and she gives us such wonderful information and lots to do. You can see that she has a world experience and she has so much to share with us. And that's all for me from the garden until we meet again next weekend. Happy gardening, lovely time to be out in the garden. But if you are going to go out, please make sure that you take all the necessary precautions, that you have a water bottle and your necks covered, and you have a sun hat, and you enjoy the rest and you have a wonderful, wonderful day. That's all. Until we meet again, inshallah. Assalamu alaikum. ورحمة الله وبركاته